Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 235 of the Last Round Podcast. After a very, very exciting week in the sport of boxing, weekend of boxing from New York City to the Southern California area. It was a great night of fights on DAZN and ESPN and also Fight TV, if you want to throw in the Broner situation there, at least for entertainment purposes, because he got a lot of attention. Got a lot of attention, at least on social media. So he still got some type of notoriety there. But jumping right back into it, fight reviews this past Friday, the 9th of June, from the Casino Miami in Miami, Florida, on Fight TV pay-per-view. The problem, Adrian Broner returns with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Bill Hutchinson, who's an attorney. So Broner beat an attorney. Broner beats him by scores of 100 to 90, 99, 91, and another 99, 91 over 10 rounds. So like I said, our most, you know, starting with our, like I mentioned, his social media popularity, his popularity in general, I would say that during the last week or so, especially fight week last week for Broner, our most popular posts were always of Broner, right?
100%, yeah. In the last week or so, yeah, he probably did multiple times compared to our posts on Taylor, you know, Teofimo Lopez, Munguia. So, yeah, it does go to show you how popular the problem is. And, you know, his return kind of went under the radar because it was on, you know, like a smaller, you know, network. And, you know, Don King didn't do like a super amount of promotion or anything like that. But,
he never really does anymore.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's good to have him back, though. It was good to have AB back.
So, like you mentioned, there wasn't a ton of promotion on there, but we gave him a little bit of promotion on Twitter. Yeah, people interacted with it, man. Even the haters and the supporters, you know, just Broner just kind of, he still moves the needle a little bit. I mean, he still does something, you know, and after the fight, he called out Rolly. I think he called him even Romello. And then Broner even said his quote, anybody can get it. And then he names all the different cultures and stuff like that.
Mexican, Puerto Rican, like,
yeah, threw that all out there. So, yeah, like I mentioned, he calls out Rolly Romero. And then I think he even said, or actually it wasn't even him who first mentioned it. It was Don King who said, oh, Oscar De La Hoya. Because Oscar De La Hoya did tweet that Broner should contact him after the fight or something. And then Don King said that in the post-fight interview, saying, hey, oh, Oscar De La Hoya wants to, you know, talk. You know, there's Ryan Garcia, obviously. They can both fight at 140, maybe a catchweight, 143, 144. Honestly, I wouldn't mind that. I honestly wouldn't mind that. I honestly think that's a very intriguing fight. Put that at a catchweight, 143. Broner and Ryan Garcia put on DAZN. What do you think?
100% in terms of the Ryan Garcia Broner fight. We kind of touched on it last week, didn't we? I think it's good for both of them. You know, AB's coming towards the end of his career. I think he's looking, you know, just for huge, huge fights, just to try to gather as much money as he can. And, you know, Ryan, I think it's a good fight for him. You know, he just lost to Javonte. You know, AB at the minute isn't throwing, you know, a million punches like he used to do at the smaller weights. His output's slightly less, which gives Ryan a good chance. You know, Ryan will go in there, he'll be taller, longer reach, got the power. I think it's a good stylistic matchup for Ryan as well. And combined, I think those two do a ton of pay-per-views.
You think it would be pay-per-view on DAZN?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I remember last week I said that I think it does similar numbers to Davis and Garcia, and you didn't agree with me, but I mean I think it's I think he could be up there. He just seems to have a loyal fan base. Verona just seems to have a loyal fan base.
I really think that I think it's an intriguing fight, and I think Ryan has a shot, but I still think Broner would be the favorite in that fight.
Because, I mean, I don't know the numbers for Broner's last few fights, but he just seems to like move the needle still, you know, and everyone just seems to love him. Everyone seems to have this like sympathetic spot for him because he's kind of funny. So, you know, everyone seems to, you know, want to watch him fight, you know, and, you know, can, because like you said, we did that post and it did like, I don't know, four, I haven't checked it, but 400,000, 500,000 views or something.
Yeah, it was hundreds of, almost half a million. Like,
yeah, and like 90%, if not higher, were all positive comments on him, the wanting him to win. So, yeah. Goes to show. So, yeah, I mean, for me, if I was him, I would pick that. I think Garcia would probably be the number one because I think that will probably do more pay per views. That would put more money in Broner's pocket. Rowley probably second. He seems to move the needle, you know, Showtime.
I mean, Broner obviously called out Rowley because Rowley has a title, has that WBA that he, you know, controversially won from Barroso. By the way, we'll touch on a little later in the show about Tony Weeks. He kind of broke his silence on that. So there's a quote he said that we'll touch on. But he called out Rowley because, one, he has a title mostly, and if Broner gets a title at 140, then he's kind of back in the picture, like legitimately. And also, him and Rowley together in the lead up, talking to each other, people would tune into that. People would tune into that. But like you said, him and Ryan, I think that's a bigger fight. More money for Broner, obviously. Don King, I think, would be willing to go and work with DAZN just because Don King obviously doesn't have a TV deal. So if DAZN offers to put up the money and put it on their network, Don King is going to want to do the deal. But when Don King brought up Oscar De La Hoya's name and Broner chimed in after Don King mentioned that, Broner said, oh no, he has to come over here and something about our net or our fish net or something, like pretty much implying that, oh no, De La Hoya has to come over here to us. It's like, come over to you to where? Where are they coming? You know, to fight TV? You know, that's not going to work. That's not going to work at all. So I think Don King knows, oh yeah, that he's going to go to DAZN. He has no TV deal. And honestly, it'd be in Broner's best interest. Golden Boy's going to obviously want an option fight on him. You know, they're going to try to make the deal and be like, hey, we'll bring you over here. You'll get a fight against Ryan, but we have an option fight on you. Like how they did with Devin Haney with Top Rank and ESPN. They did a 3-fight deal with him, right? Was it 3 or 4? 3, right?
3, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure business-wise, Golden Boy is going to try the same thing. They're going to at least try to get him for 2 fights. A Ryan fight and, you know, whoever else or something. And they might say, like, hey, look, we'll put you in the first fight. We'll give you somebody just to kind of introduce you to the DAZN audience or put you on DAZN. You'll be the headliner. And then the second fight, you and Ryan will go at it, you know, in Las Vegas or LA or something like that. I could totally see that. I honestly think Broner, the crazy thing about Broner is, like you said, he found a way back into the fold in a way. And he's arguably in line to fight, even though Ryan's coming off a loss. He's in line to get another decent payday and a lot more eyeballs on there. And if he beats Ryan, I'm not saying it's like beating Tank Davis. Obviously it's not, but you know, Broner's kind of really back in the mix. Like, oh yeah, I beat one of the guys who's like, well, highly ranked and stuff like that. Like, you know, would a Broner win over Ryan Garcia say more about Broner as a fighter and the victor, or more about Ryan as the loser?
I think it depends on the display, right? You know, if Broner goes in there, you know, blasts him out in a round or two, then, you know, people are going to be like, you know what, Ryan's never really learned, you know, the inefficiencies he has of, you know, dropping his hands and stuff like that, and, you know, being kind of like very flat-footed and, you know, not having very good movement. But if, you know, AB just, you know, beats him, you know, on a close points decision and stuff like that, you could, you know, you could run it back. You know, like you said, I'm sure, you know, Golden Boy, if they managed to do that, would want him on a, you know, two fight deal. And depending on what happens on the first fight with Ryan and depending on the pay-per-views, there'll be some way, somehow they'd want to spin it, you know, to get a rematch. So they get, you know, two bites at that cherry. So, it's funny, man. He's just one of those characters who, you know, even with his last few performances being, you know, subpar and, you know, some of those fights he hardly threw any punches in the entire thing, we still tune in. You know, we still tune in to watch him because he's a funny guy, you know, and anything can happen at any time with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it also helps that, like, you know, him being at PBC and Showtime for so long, all those fighters are very inactive. They make a lot of money, but they're very inactive. So you kind of forget about them and you don't see them for a while because they fight once every like 30 months or something like that. I mean, if Broner was a lot more active, like maybe like how a Rosado is or something like that, then maybe people would look at it like, oh, okay, well, he has a lot of losses. He's had like 15 fights in the last 4 years or something like, you know. But maybe the inactivity being with Showtime and PBC has kind of helped him because people are like, oh, okay, he's only had, you know, 3-4 losses in the last 5-6 years or something like that. And it, you know, you don't, when you look at it that way, it's like, it doesn't sound like that bad, but it's because he hasn't fought that much. But it's also like when he fought Pacquiao, the Pacquiao fight was a dud, you know, there was nothing there. So I think that really took a lot of the air out of the tires for Broner's career, was that Pacquiao fight. And then he fought to a draw with Jesse Vargas. That was on, was that DAZN?
That's a good question. Was it part of Vargas when he first signed for DAZN?
Or was it Showtime?
Probably Showtime.
I think it was Showtime. Yeah, it was Showtime. Because I remember in the post-fight interview that they were both going back and forth, and I think it was pretty entertaining. The usual Broner post-fight interviews. But yeah, I think Broner, it's just like how Linares called out, you know, this past weekend, I think Rolly Romero was at the Mayweather debacle, whatever happened over there, little exhibition fight in Florida. Jorge Linares was there too, because I think he's like living and training there right now. And Linares went with like a camera crew or somebody with a phone and confronted Rolly at the front row to like, hey, you know, let's fight. So yeah, Linares and Broner, I put them against each other. You never know. But yeah, I think Broner's best option right now, and that's not a bad option at all, is to go to DAZN, make a deal with Golden Boy, and fight Ryan. You know, why not? I would do it. And because I honestly think Broner would be the favorite in that fight. I really do. You know, but, and if Ryan beats Broner, people, there's obviously people who won't give him credit, but, you know, it kind of gives Ryan like another, like, oh yeah, I beat a former world champ who was like a former world champ in like three divisions or something. You know, it's something they could sell resume wise. And I beat this guy. He's been in the ring with Pacquiao and, you know, Marcos Maidana, you know, whatever. Marketing wise, it helps. It helps the brand, but we will see. Moving on, this past Saturday, the 10th of June, from the theater at Madison Square Garden in New York City on ESPN, regular ESPN, Teofimo Lopez, The Takeover, I guess is back. We'll see how long it sustains itself, but for now, it's back. Gets the 12-round unanimous decision win over Josh Taylor. Taylor suffers the first defeat of his professional career. Teofimo Lopez is now the WBO super lightweight champion of the world. He wins the fight by scores of 117-111 and 115-113 twice. So I didn't get a chance to watch this. I was keeping up with it online with updates because we were both there. We were both at the Munguia fight here in Southern California at the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California, which was an excellent fight. There was two great fights on both coasts this past Saturday. It was awesome. But from what I'm reading, I don't know if you got a chance to watch this, the ESPN one, and the updates that I was reading on Twitter, it seemed like Lopez really found a rhythm and was just schooling Josh Taylor. And there was people criticizing the scores that the 115-113 scores are not the scores that should have been given. 117-111 is the appropriate score. What do you think? Did you watch it? And if you did, how'd you score it?
Yeah, I mean, when I got home, I put it on and then finished watching it in the morning. Yeah, and the scorecards, I think they were too close. I thought, you know, Josh Taylor started off okay, and he's, you know, kind of got himself into some rhythm. But I don't know whether it's just... He did a very good interview afterwards with Boxing News, Rob Tebbert, and, you know, Andy, and those guys, where he said that, you know, camp was good and stuff like that. And he said he started off well, but he kind of, he wasn't using his jab, which you could notice he was kind of relying too much on his backhand. And obviously he wasn't stopping, you know, Teofimo coming in, you know, with a nice, you know, jab and the pressure that he used to throw and all the combinations that he used to throw. And he said, he's like, after like a handful of rounds, he said he just had nothing in the tank. And you could kind of see that. And I think he'd been at 140 for too long. You know, I think that winning the fight, becoming undisputed, probably going up in weight and stuff like that, and then trying to boil himself down. Obviously, getting older, his time's up at 140, because if you look at all of his fights before Jack Catterall, you know, Jack Catterall and then Teofimo Lopez, it's a completely different style, completely different. Because he used to rely on, like, you know, a lot of jabs. Once he got into range, he'd throw a lot of combinations, 3, 4, 5 punches, stuff like that. And he would kind of like wear people down. And now he doesn't do anything like that. So, yeah, I think he gave a very good interview. You know, he said that, like, you know, Teofimo was just a better man on the night. And he was, you know, Tio worked out early that, you know, Josh wasn't throwing a jab. He was running in his backhand. And then he just made the adjustment. And then after that, he kind of ran away with the fight. You know, I think was it round 9 and 10? It looked like Teofimo just took a couple of rounds off to reserve his energy, because he wanted to really kind of like show out on the last couple of rounds in like round 11 and 12 to close the show, put on a good performance in the last two rounds. And you know, and he did that, won the crowd over, unbelievable performance from him. 99% of the people watching, except you and I think Abe Gonzalez, were the only two people who picked Teofimo Lopez because of the stuff that he was saying, kind of like the place that he was in and his, you know, performances against like Sandor Martin, and then the stuff that he said in the ring against that, like, do I still have it? I think everybody was, you know, because, you know, when you talk about boxing, a lot of people say like, you know, it's 90% mental, it's 80% mental and stuff like that. And he didn't look like he was in a very good place mentally, but he proved absolutely everybody wrong. You know, on fight night, and a great performance. If you look at the two victories he's had now over Lomachenko and Josh Taylor, like arguably the best fighter at 135 and arguably the best fighter at, you know, 140 over the last few years. So, yeah, you know, take a bow, Teofimo Lopez. You know, what a way to prove everybody wrong.
And also, he announced his retirement, I guess, say that in quotation marks, that he's 25 years old and he announced his retirement. He was also this week on ESPN with Max Kellerman, and he also announced it on there that he's officially going to retire. I think that, I mean, obviously nobody believes it, him being that young, you know, but I think it's a lot of it is like, and I get it, you know, you're doing something, whether it's a sport or boxing or anything else, if you can go out on top and you have an opportunity to do it, you think about it. You think about it, because if you go out, you know, you have to have a strong mental state to, you know, really go out or retire off of a loss or something like that, which that happens to a lot of fighters. They're just like, hey, you know what? It's just my time's up. You know, it's retirement. It just happens. But I feel that, you know, Teofimo Lopez obviously has a lot of, you know, he's already publicized it even during fight week interviews about, you know, the family issues. He was doing an interview with Mark Kriegel last week where I believe he said they asked him about that comment that he made within the last couple months about Top Rank and ESPN only promote the black fighters. And he kind of doubled down on it. And his dad was trying to stop him during the interview. He's like, oh, this is off the record. And he's like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And Mark Kriegel was like, wait a minute. Like, you know, and then you can tell he was kind of having an argument with his dad. And, you know, and then he was talking about other things. And he obviously still has, there's still stuff going on, you know, that he has to take care of. So maybe you know, once he gets a hold of that, then it'll go. But it could also be like, you know, he doesn't, obviously nobody, like when he lost the Kambosos fight and then he got a divorce and then he had a kid with the his ex-wife and he wasn't even married that long. And then there was reports that Teofimo's family didn't trust her and they didn't want to go to the wedding. They didn't go to the wedding and, you know, they were trying, you know, a bunch of family drama, obviously. And he was obviously at a low point. Him, Ryan Garcia, you know, they were all kind of sharing similar, Jojo Diaz, they were all kind of sharing similar pathways, I guess, in regards to baby mama drama and, you know, families and stuff like that. How much do you think that he's just saying this, that he wants to retire because, and you know, it's understandable, but he doesn't want to risk it in terms of fighting the upper level guys again and taking a loss and then feeling like that. Like you said, he said in his, one of his past fights, he was on the middle of the camera. He said, "Do I still have it?" And they even asked him about that. I think Mark Kriegel asked him about that. And he said, "No, I was just saying that. I knew the camera was there." Well, I mean, that doesn't really sound believable. I mean, it's possible. Obviously, only he knows. But, you know, it's easy to say that looking back on it. But, I mean, it is what it is. But do you think that... I'm not going to ask you if you think he's going to come back because I think that's an easy answer. He's that young. He'll, you know, he's going to... Nobody believes he's going to retire. Nobody believes it. But the question is, how long is he going to be out of the ring for? And do you think that he's saying that he's retired because he just doesn't... He doesn't want to face these upper level guys now, like Regis Progre, who's the WBC world champ at 140, or the IBF world champion, Subriel Matias. That guy can punch. You know, maybe Teofimo, like, it's not that he can't be in a competitive fight with those guys. He just probably, nobody wants to lose, but some fighters take losses a lot harder than others. And it, you know, that's just the name of the game. Do you think that might have a lot to do with it?
I think it's one of two things. A lot of people, you know, when you're growing up, we've all watched Floyd, right? You know, and how many times did Floyd used to retire because, you know, people would entice him back with the larger purses. So I'm wondering whether, you know, Teofimo's, you know, thinking to himself, like, that he believes that he's big enough that he's kind of, you know, like his purse is going to go from a reported 2.5 million, I believe, he got for this fight, to, I don't know, 5 million, 10 million, you know, because of, you know, what he did in his last couple of fights. Or secondly, is he kind of going to do what I think we all hope he is? And, you know, at the minute, he's very hit and miss when he does media. You know, one minute he's very respectful and he says the right things. And then the next minute he's talking about, you know, wanting to kill Josh Taylor, you know, like hoping that, you know, saying that he wouldn't mind if he died in the ring, kind of kicking off at Josh Taylor's corner because of the... He didn't hand over the Ring magazine belt at the end of the fight, you know, arguing with his father and stuff like that. So I do wonder whether he's just going to take 6 months to a year out to deal with all the stuff behind the scenes, because I'm guessing he's just not very happy, because at the times when you see him, he's, you know, he's very negative and he's kind of like, because he's not happy, he's the stuff that's coming out of him, the things that he says, and he's spreading a lot of like negative things, you know, around the place. And in a lot of his interviews, he kind of like, you know, when someone's kind of down, they kind of like read like a lot of quotes and they kind of like, you know, go back to religion and stuff like that. He seems to, you know, always be quoting quotes and religion and stuff like that. Like he's looking for something like a crutch to lean on. And that's right. Kind of like what he seems to be doing at the minute. But I hope, you know, he takes 6 months to a year, get the stuff sorted at home, and then he comes back, because the Teofimo Lopez that hit the scene before, I used to say all the time on here, he was a promotional dream. He used to do everything right.
He still has the Bud Light sponsorship.
Yeah. So he had that cap on, didn't he? I saw that when he went in after the fight in the interview, he had the cap on, which was kind of humorous, because obviously what's happening with Bud Light at the time. But
yeah, but he still has. I mean, nobody else has a big American sponsor like that.
Yeah, you know. To me, I hope it's the second one. I hope he just goes away, gets everything sorted, comes back. The Teofimo Lopez that hit the scene and drew everybody in at the time, because he was. Really fun to watch. He was, you know, great in interviews, you know, before the fight, after the fight, everything he did. He had that Midas touch. at the time, right. That Midas touch, everything he touched just turned to gold. And I'd like to see that guy back. So, you know, like, I hope he goes away and gets all that sorted and comes back. The Teofimo Lopez 1.0 that we saw the original time.
Yeah. I mean, it's just consistency with him. That's what it is. It's consistency. Obviously, everybody can see that he has the talent. Like, when he dedicates himself, he can stand out from the rest. Like, he's the guy. Everybody sees that, but it's just being consistent, you know? Also, I think that one thing that really helped him with this is just like we've heard before, activity matters. He's been a lot more active in the last 2 years or so than Josh Taylor has. How long ago was a Jack Catterall fight?
They kept posting it. Wasn't it like 18 months or?
Was it?
It was like 18 months or like 2 years or something since his last fight. Because
18 to 20 months, let's just say. That was the last time Josh Taylor fought. Teofimo Lopez has fought how many times since then?
Yeah, he's definitely been a lot more active.
Maybe three?
Yeah, because he had obviously the fights as he moved up to 140. They were kind of, you know, smaller
Pedro
fights.
Campa, something?
He had Campa, then he obviously Sandor Martin, which was actually a very, you know, tricky fight for Teofimo.
Yeah, it was a tricky fight, yeah. And then obviously this Josh Taylor fight. Activity matters, man. It really does, you know. There's not that many fighters out there that just have that talent every single time to get to stay in the ring. Like, they can come in after a 20-month layoff, a 24-month layoff, and it's like they didn't miss a beat because they're just naturally talented. There's not that many fighters out there like that. So the ones that don't have that spark every single time, you need to stay active. You need to stay disciplined. And I think Teofimo is one of those fighters. Like, he needs to stay active, you know, in some type of consistent manner so he could stay at the highest level. And Josh Taylor probably is the same thing. It's the same thing. He needs to stay active because, you know, we've seen how good he is. That Jose Ramirez fight, he looked excellent. He looked excellent, you know, and that was a great fight. And Ramirez is a great fighter too. And Josh Taylor looked excellent in that fight. Then he fought Catterall. You know, maybe Catterall, a lot of people say Jack Catterall should have won that fight, but Josh Taylor pulled it out. We thought we were going to see a rematch. It didn't happen. And I think for how many months did we talk about Josh Taylor every time he was in the news? And I think I kept saying that. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, there's no way he stays at 140. He's way too big for it. He's already mentioned that he wants to move up. You know, the 7 pounds from 140 to 147 is a big gap for him to work with. So it, you know, it helps. So when they said that they were going to make this fight, I was like, wow. I was like, he's actually still going to stay there. And like you mentioned earlier, maybe it came back to bite him, you know, because it's the weight cut. Even though he made the weight and everything, you know, it seemed like Teofimo Lopez had a harder time making the weight because they had to put a towel over him. He had to strip down naked. So, you know, and Teofimo Lopez still won the fight. But Josh Taylor, you know, he told Lopez, he's like, oh, you know, let's give me another chance. He wanted to run it back. I still think Taylor, even in a rematch with Lopez at a later point, you know, if it's not like 10 years later, you know, would still give a good fight. I still think so. But now this sets up a Jack Catterall, Josh Taylor fight because, you know, they're both. Catterall lost to Taylor. Now Taylor lost to Lopez. Like, oh, okay, we'll put them to fight again in a rematch. Why not? You know, put it over there in the UK.
Well, they could. I mean, the interview I saw with Josh, I think he was saying that it's, you know, it's probably going to be 147 now just because he says that, you know, he can make weight, but fighting the next day, like his legs just aren't there. You know, after like 4 or 5 rounds, he said he went back to the corner during the fight and he said to Joe McNally, he's like, my legs are gone. Like, I can't do it. But, you know, with the warrior that he is, he wanted to try and keep hold of his belt and just carried out, you know, fought the entire 12 rounds. And, you know, I thought he was very good. I thought he was very respectful after the fight, which was good to see because we do see some fighters, you know, making all these different excuses and stuff like that. And he just said, yeah, you know, you were the better man on the night. You beat me. And, you know, I would like a rematch if you want to give me one, but I don't think we'll see it. Especially if it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, Teofimo does, because if he is going to do what he says and retire or, you know, take some, you know, quite a lot of time off. Are they going to just relinquish the WBO belt? And, you know, that Jack Catterall, I imagine, would be up for that against, it'd be a vacant title fight between him and eight other, right? You know, maybe Liam Parro, I think. I think those two are the top two. The Australian Liam Parro, who, and Jack Catterall, I believe, are the top two in the WBO ranking.
So Teofimo, when he comes back, you know, that'd be the surprise of a century if he actually stays retired for the rest of his career. I mean, I think there was a report that he made like just over $2 million for this fight. Mm. So, I mean, but with New York taxes, who knows? A little bit less than that. Right. It's like California, same thing. But, I mean, I think realistically, the politics obviously come back to play again in promotional politics in boxing. Teofimo could not fight Rolly for the WBA unless he goes over to Showtime. Even then, who knows if they let him over there. Because Showtime, PBC, Espinoza, they're going to try to keep that WBA, just like any promoter does. They want to keep that belt as in-house as possible because it helps sell the fight. It helps sell the network. You know, we've been told before by TV people and everything else, promotional people, that, yeah, sometimes these fights, these networks, like, they want some type of title attached to it so they can promote it, like, oh, for the WBA title or something like that. You know, like, when Ryan and Tank fought, Jimmy Lennon Jr. introduces Ryan Garcia as a former world champion, WBC world champion. It's like, he was never world champion. He had an interim belt. Those don't count. And he had, like, the lower level ones, the trinkets. But he was never a world champion. But, you know, for TV purposes, to sell to the casual viewer, they like to attach it some type of championship, especially a world championship on there, because it helps, like, people tuning in, like, oh, it's a world title fight. That means he's some of the best guys in the world. Not necessarily. A lot of time it's political. But I think Teofimo Lopez, the only way, I mean, now that he has a WBO, I'm sure ESPN and Top Rank would want to make a Jose Ramirez fight between Teofimo and Jose Ramirez. I think that's a good fight. I mean, that's a good fight for the WBO title. The only logical one that's outside of Top Rank ESPN that would fight Teofimo Lopez, but he would have to go over there, is Regis Progre. You know, but Teofimo Lopez would have to go to DAZN. He's already went there once for the Kambosos fight. But the Rolly Romero WBA Showtime, that's not going to work. Too much politics. The politics are too strong there. The IBF's Subriel Matias, isn't he also PBC Showtime?
I believe, wasn't the talk of Eddie was in contract talks of him because he was a free agent?
Oh, was he? I don't know. I didn't see that.
I believe so. I think I said that on an IFL TV interview or an interview with Eddie where there was talk that he may try to sign him because he has Regis Progre, obviously Jack Catterall as well. So he was trying to make a bit of a stamp in the 140.
Maybe. Who knows? I don't know. I still think that Showtime PBC has some type of option on him, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, you know, let's just see how long Lopez is out of the ring for. I do agree that he's at least going to be out until next year. He's not going to fight the rest of this year. But it also depends on Top Rank and ESPN. Like, is his contract up? There were some rumors that his contract was up, so he's out already of the Top Rank deal.
But Bob Arum said it wasn't true.
Oh, okay. I didn't think it was true. I didn't think it was true. So if it's not true, then I could see Top Rank and ESPN, you know, saying like, hey, man, like, you know, you can say you retired all you want, but if you ever come back, you owe us fights. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's how it works, right? Usually. I mean, you would think. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But, yeah, don't expect to see him until probably a year from now. So, which sucks, but, you know, if he came back by the end of the year, defend the title, you know, it'd be great. Stays active. He can be one of the best fighters in the whole sport, but, you know, it is what it is. He has to take care of, like, you know, his personal problems and all that. And hopefully it works out for him. And then he stays confident as he is after this victory and comes back and keeps the takeover going, I guess. Moving on. Also this past Saturday from the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California, on DAZN, Jaime Munguia remains undefeated with a hard fought, definitely the hardest fought fight of his career, over 12 rounds in a unanimous decision win over Sergey Derevchenko, who takes the fifth loss of his professional career. This was for the vacant WBC silver middleweight title. I think they actually fought at 168. It wasn't even at 160. I think it was a 168 fight. Munguia got the win by scores of 114, 113 twice, and 115, 112. So like I mentioned, we were in the building for this, covering this fight. We had, like I said, we had two great fights on each East Coast and West Coast. Munguia, this was definitely, I think when we talked about it last week, I said, I don't think you agreed with me as strongly as I thought you would, but I said that Derevchenko was going to be the toughest fight of Munguia's career. And that was completely true. I was right on the money. Derevchenko can fight, man. He's always that guy. His trainer, Andre Rozier, even said in the post-fight, and it was actually kind of a funny analogy, that Derevchenko is always the bridesmaid and he's never the bride. Because, you know, he fights all these top-level guys and he gives them such a battle, but he always ends up on the losing end. It's true. It's true. Like, those five losses he has, it's not like he's been blown out. Like, he's fought hard in every single one. Like, he's the would you call him the definition of a gatekeeper?
Ooh,
or no?
Kind of like a little bit harsh, isn't it? But I guess. Because like you say.
Like, or is he the second gate you have to get through?
Because I think there's only really what Charlo that kind of beat him where you're like, okay, like Charlo won that. It was a very close decision when he fought Triple G. A lot of people thought Sergi won that.
But even Charlo said after the fight that Derevchenko was a hard fighter. He's like, yes, he can hit hard.
And then when he fought Jacobs, it was either like a split decision or a majority decision when he fought Jacobs. So,
yeah,
it's very, like you say, he doesn't really ever get blown out. And I remember saying last week, I think both of us were like, okay, this is going to be a super hard fight. It's just, has Father Time caught up with Derevchenko?
Yeah.
And he hadn't. Derevchenko is outrunning Father Time at the minute. Yeah, definitely hasn't caught up with him. And going into the last round, I had
Derevchenko winning going into the last round.
I had him winning, and it was only due to the fact that Munguia dropped him with a body shot, which flipped it to 114, 113 to Munguia. So, yeah, unbelievable fight. Great fight, like you said, East Coast and West Coast. And I think to Derevchenko, hopefully he doesn't take it to heart and retire, because I think he's still got some, on that performance, he's still got a little bit left in the tank. Yeah.
He has a lot of miles on him, but I think you're right. I think he still has something left in the tank. And Munguia, 26 years old, really had to dig down deep. Both fighters had to dig down deep, but obviously Munguia, as soon as he, like you said, as soon as he got that knockdown in the 12th round, and they were both in trouble throughout the 12 rounds. At different points, both of them were hurt, and both of them had landed on each other. And honestly, I think that Munguia, before the 12th round, probably had the worst of it. That's why I was kind of, you know, I was like, I think Derevchenko overall is, you know, is winning this fight. It was a close fight. But when Munguia got him with that body shot, and you got to give it to Munguia too, because, you know, it's that Mexican style. He was staying consistent to the body all night. He was going to the body all night, and he finally just, you know, it worked out for him. Just money in the bank and those body shots, and that's what he got that knockdown with. Where Derevchenko is. It was like a flash KO to the rib cage area, and Derevchenko just felt it, bam, and just went down to a knee. Right when I saw that, I told some of the people next to me, some of the other media people, I told them, I was like, that won him the fight. I was like, as long as he doesn't go down either, I was like, that just won him the fight. That's like you said, that's exactly what it was. That's, 'cause look at those scores. Two scores of 114, 113, he won by 1 point. It was that knockdown. So he had to dig down deep. And I think, you know, people were saying all this, you know, Munguia's, he's 42-0, he's over 40 fights, but who's he really fought? You know, his toughest fights were Dennis Hogan and
Liam Smith.
And he wasn't really getting the credit for that, because they, you know, those were tough fights and he still got the victory. I think now he's shown that he's got the heart, man. And if you, they, I could see the Golden Boy stat, like the Eric Gomez and Oscar De La Hoya and Bernard Hopkins on the side of the ring, they were excited, man. They were excited for him. Even Julio Cesar Chavez, who was on the TV Azteca, Spanish-Mexican TV, was standing up yelling directions at him, you know? And he was doing commentary. And he was standing up telling him what to do. I was like, oh, okay. And it, I saw some criticism of him saying, oh, he needs to stay objective. He's a commentator. I mean, I, in a way, yes, but he's not really a, Chavez has never been a commentator. They, you know, he's just so popular with the Hispanic fan base that they use him and he does it, but he's never been a commentator. Like, he's a fighter and he's a fan too. So, you know, it's like kind of like, you know, the standard, I guess, might be a little different, but it is what it is. It is a business. But yeah, that was a great fight. It was an excellent fight. The crowd was really into it. I think that arena holds what, maybe 10, 11,000 full capacity. And they got just under 8,000. I think they got like maybe 7,600 in attendance. So it was a pretty decent crowd, especially in the main event. They were really into the main event. That whole crowd was really into the main event. They were really behind Munguia, especially when he got that knockdown. People went crazy. People went crazy. And when they announced Munguia as a winner, you can tell he was very happy because he, you know, he put his all into it. I mean, yeah, I think that now I just hope that, you know, Zamfer? He's with Zamfer and Golden Boy. I just hope that they can get him a fight, man, because, you know, we saw Ryan and Tank fight on Showtime, but, you know, obviously Tank as the A side, Showtime had all the power, and they, there was just really bad blood between Golden Boy and Showtime and PBC. And, you know, I don't really think they really want to work again together. They're not going to let Munguia go to Showtime. You know, they're not going to let Charlo go to the Zone. Who's realistic for Munguia now? Who do you think? And this is at 168. So assuming he stays at 168.
John Ryder?
Yeah. Coming off a Canelo loss, you know, kind of connected to Canelo. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Do we see that before the end of the year?
Munguia likes to be active, so... Yeah.
That's a really good thing about him, is that he stays active regardless. People might complain about the opponents, but what else can you do when the promotional politics are so strong? You at least got to stay active and fight somebody. At least you're getting that, right?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a fight that kind of makes sense, right? You know, John Ryder probably wants to come back to a fairly big fight after, you know, being in there with someone like Canelo. You don't want to drop too far down, right? It's kind of like hard to motivate yourself, I assume. So, you know, going in with someone like Munguia, if he does it over here as well, you know, the amount of tickets that, you know, Munguia shifts. And like you said, it's if Munguia gets in there and blows away Ryder, then you have that, like, Canelo didn't do that. Canelo didn't blow away John Ryder. You know, he went rounds with him. Right. So that put, you know, that's something that, you always like to do that links you to another fighter. So in the future, you know, if Munguia is lucky enough to get, like, you know, a shot of Canelo, you know, the red panty night, if you're going to call it, like Conor McGregor says in the UFC, that's what it is. You know, everyone's chasing that sort of fight. So I think it's a fight that makes sense. And I think it's a fight that's also fairly easy to make because they're both on the zone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the John Ryder is a very good suggestion. I think that could happen. I could see that. Both the zone, one's Matchroom, one's Golden Boy, but it could work. Yeah.
Do you think we ever see Munguia, Diego Pacheco?
No. Not ever? Yes. Soon? No. I mean, unless Golden Boy and the zone just really can't get anybody else with the bigger name. Because, I mean, Diego Pacheco is not a big name.
Munguia's 26. Diego Pacheco's 22.
Right. Yeah, but now not anytime soon. Maybe in the future, there's a really good chance for that, but not anytime soon. Especially after a win like this, I think Munguia, like, you know, they have to really give it a shot to try to make these bigger fights with these bigger guys. And I think the only one that's realistic, like you mentioned, is John Ryder. You know, Charlo's not going to do it. The promotional politics, Showtime, Espinoza, PBC, Golden Boy, they don't get along. The only reason the Tank Davis Ryan Garcia fight was made was because Ryan just, you know, had the platform to, you know, to force it and agreed to all their terms, and then ended up complaining about him after, even though he said he wasn't complaining before. That reminds me, in the post fight press conference, there was somebody who asked Eric has to Jaime Munguia. I know who it was. I'm not going to say it was, but if you watch some of the videos, it's on there. Somebody asked Jaime Munguia, like, because it was just Eric Gomez and the PR staff for Golden Boy there. And then they asked Jaime Munguia, they asked him and Fernando Beltran, the guy from Zamford, oh, hey, is Jaime mad because Oscar De La Hoya isn't here at the press conference? And Eric Gomez looked at the guy, but he laughed. Like, he laughed about it. He's like, oh, no, Eric Gomez is here. He's like, I'm here. Like, you know, it was funny. It was funny. But I thought it was, you know, I was like, oh, what if they got mad about that? But no, it worked out. It was pretty funny.
If you're Oscar, what is the plan here? Like, what is the end goal? What is the final boss? He's 42-0. You think so?
Yeah. De La Hoya would love a Canelo fight to be involved again because he knows that Canelo is the biggest payday. He knows that's the most money that, you know, it's a business. Golden Boy also gets a cut, and Canelo's the big dog. And their cut is going to be even larger if Canelo's involved. And if Munguia somehow or another pulls it out, he just beat, you know, who would feel more like happier about a win over Canelo? Would it be Munguia and his team, or would it be Oscar De La Hoya?
The reason I asked that, I knew you were going to say Canelo because he's the prize everyone wants, right? I was on, I think it's it was Twitter. I was on Twitter today, and Eli Setback asked Robert Garcia and Robert Garcia Jr., will we ever see Canelo, David Benavidez? And Robert Garcia said, no, he doesn't want to fight another Mexican because he doesn't want to lose that pride and that fan base to another Mexican if he somehow, some way did lose. Do you think that's the same for Munguia as well, I assume?
No, I don't think it's the same for Munguia. I think Munguia would fight Canelo because it's Canelo. It's the top dog.
No, and I mean, Canelo won't fight them. He doesn't want to lose to
him. I think Canelo, that might have something to do with it. It has reason to it. But I think Canelo, for the Munguia fight, it's more of Canelo's beef against Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy. He doesn't want to give them a piece of the pie, especially because how, you know, that split happened. He's going to be like, nope. He's like, you don't deserve a cut of my paydays. So I think it's more that. I honestly don't think Canelo has a problem with Munguia. I'm sure he's a fan. He's like, oh, yeah, he's Mexican. He can fight. I'm really good. I don't think he has any problem with Munguia and his team. I think it's just more Golden Boy, which is unfortunate, but I think it's going to be that. The Benavidez situation, Canelo's already said before, he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, we're open to that fight. He's like, but he has to fight all the guys. He's like, let him fight all these other guys, you know? The thing is, Benavidez, like, and Showtime and PBC, like, they're smart because they've been utilizing the public pressure and putting Benavidez's name out there. Because there's casual fans. You know, every time somebody with a big name fights, we always get asked about it by casual fans. Like, hey, so-and-so's fighting, Ryan Garcia's fighting, or Canelo's fighting. How good is this guy? It's getting to that point a little bit with David Benavidez. Because there's a couple people who have asked me who are casual fans. Like, hey, you know, what about Benavidez Canelo? Benavidez will beat him, huh? Like, and how come Canelo doesn't fight him? Is he scared of him? I've gotten that more than a few times than you would think, for me to notice at least. And, you know, you got to give it to, you know, Benavidez and his team and PBC and Showtime for capitalizing on that public pressure and interviews and stuff. But Canelo's said in the past, like, oh yeah, he's like, yeah, we're open to that fight, but let him fight all the other guys first, you know, like, let him fight all these other guys and beat them. And then he gets a shot at me. Like, I'm the final boss. I mean, he also kind of has a lot of reasoning behind that too, you know? But, you know, that's just how fights are in the boxing world and in the fighting world, especially the boxing world. People say, oh, they're scared of him. That's why he hasn't fought him. And it increases the public pressure. And I think, you know, Canelo, it's just his way to kind of stick it to them. And also, it might be because of the whole Showtime thing. I mean, how many times has PBC, Espinoza and Showtime people talk shit about Canelo and you know, and about Eddie Hearn? And Canelo's already said that he's a big Eddie Hearn fan. He likes the guy. And Espinoza, Showtime sports president, hates Eddie Hearn. I mean, so does Bob Arum. So does Oscar De La Hoya. So they all kind of have that in common. Leonard Ellerbe hates Eddie Hearn, and they all have different points. Have talked shit about Canelo. They all have, and you know Canelo, he hears that, he reads that. So I don't know. I think it's more like, I don't think he's scared of Benavidez. I don't think that's it at all. I think he's just kind of like, I'm the cash cow. I'm gonna make my decisions, you know. And people are just like, oh, you know, he's gonna go after Bivol even though he lost. Like, see, I don't think that's fair. That's fair criticism for Canelo, like saying like he wants to go back to 175 to try to avenge his loss against Bivol, even though Bivol he beat him, and it's probably gonna be the same outcome the next time. But you know, when you get to that level, you're gonna get criticized. And people are going to be like, oh, he's only fighting at 175 because he knows his undisputed titles at 168 are on the line. But if he fights him at 168, then people are going to be like, oh, how come he doesn't fight him at his natural weight at 175? That's where he has the title. Like, he said that in interviews, and he's right. The pressure, the people will criticize regardless. So right now you got all the Benavidez side and the PBC side, the Showtime side, all their fans criticizing him for that. Saying, oh, how come he doesn't fight at 168 and put his titles on the line? He's afraid of it. You know, and if it was flipped, then, you know, he would get the same criticism. But going back to Munguia, yeah, I think Munguia would easily fight Canelo. Easily. But I think Canelo, because Golden Boy's involved, it puts Munguia in a further corner. I mean, who's in a further corner right now from Canelo as an opponent? Is it Benavidez or is it Munguia?
Going off what we've heard today, Munguia, right?
Yeah, probably. I really do think it is. It's unfortunate too, but I think Munguia is in a further corner.
You know,
from Canelo.
You know, we're going to touch on it later, yeah, because obviously there's rumors that Eddie and Canelo were in talks with Al Haymon last week to, you know.
Well, supposedly it was just Canelo and Eddie Eddie Reynoso. I thought you meant Eddie Hearn. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, to do the fight with Benavidez, so. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Or maybe Charlo. I think they mentioned Charlo. I don't even think they mentioned Benavidez. I think it was a Charlo matchup. But we'll touch on that in a few minutes. But yeah, like I mentioned, Jaime Munguia definitely gets the hardest win and most impressive win of his career so far at 42-0 with the 12-round unanimous over Sergey Dervinchenko. So let's see what Munguia ends up from here. And then Jose Benavidez Sr., actually, who's the father of David Benavidez, FaceTimed Jaime Munguia in the post-fight press conference. So there was video of that. There's video on our Twitter account as well of that at the Last Round 12 on Twitter. I took a video of that. Munguia's talking to him on FaceTime and then puts the microphone on the phone so people can hear. So that was interesting. Somebody from the media row FaceTimed Jose Benavidez Sr. and then Ben, and it was interesting to see, because then you could see some of the Golden Boy staff like, oh no, what's going to happen here? So it was pretty funny to see, but it was pretty standard. You know, Jose Benavidez Sr. said, hey, you know, it'd be an honor to fight you, two Mexican warriors, blah blah blah. And Munguia was like, yeah, you know, let's do it, I'm available, you know, like I'm ready whenever. And you know, pretty standard answers, but that was probably the moment of the press conference for sure. Moving on in the co-main event, Shane Mosley Jr. gets the 7th round knockout stoppage over Demetrius Ballard. So up until this point, up until the knockout, the fight was getting booed in that entire arena. People were just bored with the fight. You know, they were both just kind of dancing around each other. And then when Mosley kind of got that knockout, that punch, that's when the crowd erupted and then really got into it. So, I think I don't know what they're trying to do with Mosley Jr. But Golden Boy, at least based on the last couple fights and now even in the post fight, Eric Gomez was there and all that. They're really behind Mosley Jr. So I wonder, you know, if they're trying to work him up to maybe being a Munguia opponent or you know, but they have a lot of stock into him. So, and they're like really happy for him and, you know, just seeing the interaction he had with like Eric Gomez and PR team and Bernard Hopkins, they're putting a lot of stock into him. So what do you think? What do you think is the end goal here for Mosley? Like, you know, do you think that they're just trying to give him a shot, see how far he can go, and then see what happens?
I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, that fight was for a WBO, NABO trinket. So it looks like they're trying to position him down the WBO route. So it's going to be, interesting to see, what they try to do, later down the line with him. But he's managed to string, like a few good wins together now. So it's, are they going to try and cash out with like a Triple G fight, something like that? It's a winnable opponent, isn't it, for, Triple G.
What about a Munguia Triple G fight? Actually, we didn't even touch on that. Who's more realistic, John Ryder or Triple G? Next, at least.
Yeah, it's a good question. With Triple G, is he just trying to get a couple of big... I mean, it'd be a big payday, right? Because Triple G...
If I was Triple G, I would go for it.
The bigger payday is Triple G, isn't it? If you're Munguia, it's the biggest payday for both of them, I would imagine, for Triple G and for Munguia. So, yeah, I could see that being made. But it's just, does Triple G want to go in there with someone not so much younger than him and stuff like that? There is a chance he could get hurt fighting someone like Munguia as well.
Yeah,
but yeah, either of them, I think, would be big. But the Triple G fight would be bigger because obviously he resonates with the Mexican fans. There was a time where
putting that fight in LA too. I think a Triple G Munguia fight would do really well at the Staples Center or the Crypto Arena, whatever it's called. I honestly think that fight would do really well.
Definitely, 100% in this area. Both of them are huge names in this area.
Yeah, yeah, that would definitely do really, really well. So I mean, we'll see how that goes. And like I said, Mosley Jr., they're trying to position him too. Maybe just keeping him there for a Munguia clash in the future, just in case they need a name. So,
because the WBO champion is that Zanabek, so that's nobody wants to fight that guy.
So, oh yeah,
you're better off.
He's like Bivol, like high risk, low reward.
100%. So it's maybe he's just looking for more of a name, trying to get himself up there. But he did say in an interview afterwards, it's strap season. So shit, yeah. Saying Mosley Jr. is supposedly looking for some type of trinket, some type of gold.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also on the card, I know there was a female fight. Mayeli Flores, I think, also got the victory. I think she was the B-side too. And because she was also in the post-fight press conference, taking questions. I think she was one of the first ones. That was a pretty exciting fight too. The fans were really into that. So, that produced some action in there. So she got the win there. I think she got the unanimous decision win. And then also in the opening bout of the broadcast, our guest of the week last week, who was on our show a couple days before his fight this past Saturday, Ricardo Sandoval, El Nino Sandoval, gets the 22nd win of his career over 10 rounds, a unanimous decision over Rocco Santamaro. Sandoval won by scores of 96-94 twice and 98-92. This had its moments too. Sandoval came out with a banda, a Mexican style band, with the whole getup and everything. I think he told us last week in the interview that in his pro debut, when he did his pro debut in Mexico, he also had a band. So maybe that's his calling card now. Every time he comes out with a band. But he did his thing and he got the win. I was impressed by him, and he was fun to interview last week, right?
Yeah, and it was a decent performance against Rocco, who came in amazing shape. In the back, he was looking super quick, super aggressive, and he tried to really push, Sandoval back from the get go, and those two just threw down. It was a great fight and super, super close, as the scorecards can tell you. But a good victory for Sandoval and on to bigger and better things. But Rocco, it's one of those performances where nobody really lost, because I'm sure Golden Boy would want him back and give him another good payday because of the performance that he put in.
Right, right. Yeah. So we'll see. Sandoval in the flyweight division, flyweights have a lot of, you know, Julio Cesar Martinez, Chocolatito Gonzalez, Bam Rodriguez. So if Goldenborg can kind of get him up into that conversation, you know, he can have some pretty good fights with those guys, and, you know, let's see how it works out. Also this past weekend from the Wembley Arena in London, England, on DAZN, Sonny Edwards, the IBF flyweight champion of the world, remains undefeated with a unanimous decision win over 12 rounds against Andres Campos, who takes the first loss of his career. Edwards wins by scores of 117-111 on all three judges' scorecards. What do you think about his performance?
Good performance. I thought he could have actually made it a little bit easier, but he, you know, looked like, you know, and he said before the fight that he was, you know, trying to get Campos out there because he wanted to really make a statement. Matchroom debut, first fight with Eddie Hearn, you know, the unification fights with, you know, Bam Rodriguez or Julio Cesar Martinez on the horizon. I think he just wanted to go in there, you know, and really put a beating on Campos for the fans and just to really make a statement, which he, you know, he did in terms of just schooling him, but we didn't get that, you know, that knockdown, that, you know, that visual moment that we all wanted. But still a good performance from Sonny, and it's kind of what we're used to. He just gets in there. He's fun to watch, makes people kind of look silly with his what he does in there, and can't wait to see him against either of those two, Bam Rodriguez or Martinez, by the end of the year, please, Eddie.
Would Edwards come to the United States for either of those fights, or would Bam Rodriguez or Martinez go to the UK?
In terms of, like, where would it be bigger, you mean? Is that what?
Yes.
That's a good question, because Sonny does sell a little bit. Bam probably sells over here.
In Texas, for sure.
Ooh.
It's a hard one.
Yeah. I say probably he comes here because I think the British fans are so used to staying up at stupid o'clock at night to watch fights that it would probably earn more money by fighting here because you would get the USA fans, and the English fans are silly enough to stay awake till 2-3 o'clock in the morning to watch it. So I think that would probably be, in terms of the bigger audience and money-wise, I think Sonny probably comes here for that one. And then Sonny even, I think, said that he agreed to fight Julio Cesar Martinez in Mexico, but the fight fell through because of Martinez or something, you know, previously. So, yeah, I think he would be open to coming over here as well.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I agree with that. I think Edwards comes to the United States, probably Texas or Southern California, I'm assuming. Probably Texas, I could see. Since Matchroom's done a couple cards there. Also on the card, Ellie Scottney remains undefeated at 7-0 with the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds over Sharnika Johnson. This is for the IBF Super Bantamweight title. What'd you think about her performance?
Good performance. I thought, you know, it's great to see her in her seventh fight. She beats somebody with a lot more experience for the IBF title. So, you know, and the new for Ellie Scottney, another British champion, you know, which is good. I thought it was a good performance. I was hoping Ellie would have been able to get her out of there, to be honest with you, just because, you know, I think we just need some more stoppages in women's fights. But, you know, hopefully over time, as everyone gets better and stuff like that, we start to see more stoppages because women's boxing is kind of relatively new, right? You know, in terms of like how it's exploded over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. So just good performance from her. And I think, you know, we'll see her in with some more Brits and stuff like that and get some more good clashes because Matchroom are definitely investing in women's boxing.
And then moving on to fight previews, this upcoming Saturday, the 17th of June, from the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, on DAZN.
What a name, huh?
Regis Progre, 28-1, goes up against Danilo Zorrilla, 17-1. This is for Regis Progre's WBC Super Lightweight title of the world. This is Progre's first fight back with Eddie Hearn and DAZN. He was with them before. Then he left to like Triller and others, wherever he was at. But now he signed with Matchroom and DAZN again after, I think, Top Rank and Matchroom made him offers. And this is like his comeback fight. I think he was initially supposed to fight. Who was his initial opponent?
Liam Parra.
Yeah, but he had like an injury, right, or something. Yeah. So he had to pull out. So we'll see how this works out. I'm really interested to see how this works for Regis Prograis in terms of like how much of a draw is he in his own hometown, you know, because that arena, I think, holds pretty decent amount, right?
I think it's a 20 bucks.
So, I mean, regardless how much they are, if people show up and it looks good on TV, it's good for him, you know? I mean, because if people don't show up, because I'm telling you, like, I think that arena holds, I don't even remember, but I think it holds a pretty decent amount of people.
Is it like a basketball arena? Is that?
Yeah, it might be. Now it's bugging me. Let me see what the Smoothie King Center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's fought in New Orleans before. Capacity 17,791.
Right, yes. Well, he's going to do some way, you know, when you've got Jaime Munguia, who's super popular in Southern California, doing between, 6,000 to 8,000, we estimate. So
it's the home of the New Orleans Pelicans, the NBA team.
Yeah, so they're probably going to just put the ring one side and do half a side, right? You know.
Yeah, because that's why I knew it was a big arena. So that's you know, and that's like full. I'm assuming 17,000, almost 18,000, close to that. So I mean, if he can at least maybe get 10, like how Ryan did when he fought Javier Fortuna at Staples Center. I think there was a report that he did like 11,000, were the reported number, whatever they announced. I mean, the Staples Center in LA holds, if you completely pack it, I think it's like 20,000, depending on the setup. So, you know, but I think he did like 11,000 or something, which was a pretty decent crowd. But yeah, I mean, let's see how he does. Like if he does over 10,000, I think it's a success. You think he does or no?
He is popular, but it's just he may do well because of the lack of fights that you get in certain areas. So I think when you get a big fight in like somewhere like New Orleans or Detroit recently, people just kind of go to it because it's unusual to have it there, you know? Like, you know, when they do the NFL in London, it sells out every single time because the NFL rarely comes to London, right? It comes like, once or twice a season, if that. So, you know, it could be something like that, and they've priced it appropriately. So, and Regis is a draw, you know? I think he's good on social media. I think he's pretty popular. I know that when he went over to the UK, a lot of people liked him because he talks well. He's good to watch. So I mean, I hope he does well. He always seems like a funny character, a pretty nice dude, and stuff like that. So you know, we interviewed him, didn't we? We had him on the show back in the day.
Yeah, I think we interviewed him at the StubHub Center in Carson, California, right there.
Yeah, and he's a cool guy. So I could see people showing out for him. And you know, the cheapest ticket is like 20 bucks. So that's priced appropriately if they're trying to fill that stadium for him. And I think he's going to get a good performance as well. I watched Danilito Zaria at, I think it was the Pechanga Casino when he fought Arnold Barboza, when we met Kel Dansby. Kel Dansby came on the show previously. Right. That was the fight he was at. Barboza dealt with Zaria, if I remember correctly, pretty well. And I rate Regis Prograis as a better fighter than Arnold Barboza. And I know styles make fights, but I think Regis Prograis is kind of unorthodox. And we saw he pretty handily dealt with Jose Zepeda, who we both rate. So I think he probably does a number on Zaria, and I think he may get him out of there late on, and hopefully that's in front of a packed crowd in his home city.
Yeah. Yeah, we will see. But Prograis can fight, man. He can fight. You know,
some big fights on the horizon after this one, after Matchroom. This is kind of like his homecoming, right? And then after that, I'm sure we're going to see him in there with some of the big names. And
that's, I mean, you would hope so, but Prograis can fight, man. I don't know. I don't think that, you know, I feel like he's going to really, unless they offer a ton of money to these opponents, like they did with Jose Ramirez and Maurice Hooker, for Ramirez to go to zone for a unification matchup. I don't think it's, you know, it's going to be a tough time for Prograis, because Prograis is dangerous. He's dangerous. So these other fighters at 140, unless they get paid and overpaid, like definitely overpaid, they're not going to willingly go for it. They're really not.
And I think you'll agree with me. I know these two people were calling each other out for some time, and we didn't include Progre on the list previously, and it's probably because he's dangerous. Broner, you know, he could have been in a potential opponent for Broner years ago. You know, it looked like Progre was waiting for that fight for some time, kind of like the Amir Khan Mayweather thing. Never materialized. And, you know, I think it's too late now. I think he's too dangerous for someone like Broner. I think Broner's probably going to go for, you know, the biggest purses that he can find and kind of just sell his name, because he's kind of, he's a lot closer to retirement than he is his prime, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we will see, but I'm really interested to see Progre and how this Matchroom DAZN deal develops and proceeds forward. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Deontay Wilder is reportedly close to a fight date, at least some type of date. We don't know any type of opponent, but the former heavyweight champion of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, said in a recent interview that he'll be back in the ring by August or September. And he's currently narrowing down the list of opponents. So he said that.
It's supposed to be in California. I was chatting to a few people at the event, and on that card is hopefully going to be Chris Arreola, Frank Sanchez.
Well, Wilder's been living and I think training out here.
Yeah, we were chatting to Malik Scott, and hopefully, fingers crossed, me and Danny have his number, and we're going to drop by the gym when Wilder comes back. I think he's flown home for a little bit, and he's also been in talks over, obviously, for the big fight in December. So hopefully we can get something closer to the time for you guys at the Brickhouse Gym in LA.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's been out here. Maybe we can get some content in the gym there. So yeah, we'll see if he comes back by September. I mean, he's been out since the Fury loss. So, I mean, we'll see. But Wilder's always an exciting fight because he knocks everybody out besides Fury, but he's knocked everybody out. So we'll see how it all works out. I mean, and then wasn't there a report that Andy Ruiz is no longer with Heyman or no longer with Showtime, or his deal was up or something like that? Did you see that?
I saw that. Yeah. A rumor, as far as I know. I don't know if it's...
I wasn't confirmed, but I saw it somewhere, and I whoever said it seemed like to have some type of credibility. But I forgot. Maybe they didn't. But, I mean, we'll see. Maybe Wilder doesn't want to fight Ruiz. Maybe Ruiz doesn't want to fight Wilder. I don't know. Like, I know they were talking about that fight, but, I mean, who knows? I think Wilder's going to end up fighting, like, somebody just to get back out there. It's not going to be anybody big, but we'll see.
But look, I mean, those Saudi rumors, which seem to be 80% confirmed, I guess. Would you want him in there with someone super dangerous just before he's potentially going to be getting an ungodly amount of money in December?
Well, that's why I think he knows, like, oh, I'll get a comeback fight because I don't want to disrupt the payday in Saudi Arabia, you know? Everybody's looking over there. Now they're even talking about Canelo looking over there because the UFC reportedly has the date, the Mexican Independence Day weekend, locked in in September, which is obviously traditionally always Canelo's date. There's reports that Canelo might fight Badu Jack. You know, there's talks around that in Saudi Arabia. Maybe they're offering a ton of money, and Canelo's like, oh, it's a ton of money.
Well, the card's supposed to be Joshua Wilder, Fury Usyk. Canelo, Badu Jack is supposed to be the three big names on the card.
Who headlines?
Wow, that's a good question, right? Who headlines?
if that really happens,
Fury Usyk, I guess.
That's going to be the biggest. That's going to go down in the history books. That really is. And I'm not talking about, like, boxing and combat sports history. That's going to go down in world history. Something like that. That's a huge event. And it sucks that it's over there, but Saudi Arabia has a ton of money.
Imagine the amount of money for the purses for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. But I never expected Canelo to go over there, but maybe the money's tempting. But I still don't think that Canelo goes over there for that. I still don't think so. I really don't.
Badu Jack's manager is the guy that heads all that up. That's why Badu's getting all this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're throwing his name out there to get him some publicity, but I don't think Canelo goes over there and does that, you know? I mean, everybody has a price, like Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man in professional wrestling used to say, but I don't think that's Canelo's first option. Even if they, you know, they offer him like $100 million, I don't think he's going to do it. I just don't think he's,
it's a chance.
I think he has his legacy is really important to him, I think.
But that's the thing. That's why. Because if
no, win, I know.
That's but, what, five weight world champion, right? If he wins, right?
Yeah, could be. But I mean, we'll see. I'd be surprised if they announced that for him to go over there, but I just don't see it.
If he beats, then he could go and do Bridgeweight.
I guess.
Six weight world champion or whatever it would be.
Yeah. So I don't know. Moving on, as we mentioned earlier, Tony Weeks, who had that controversial stoppage a couple weeks back or a month or so back of Rolly Romero and Barroso, which was a horrible stoppage. Recently, I think last week or something, broke his silence in some type of article or some type of written story. And he said, well, what was in my mind was a 40-year-old fighter, Barroso, in a young man's game. Any official will tell you get a fight and a fighter is that at an advanced age, you're going to look at him a little harder than the other fighter. When I look at a fighter who's up there in age, there's two things I look at: his reaction when he takes his first hit and his stamina in the later rounds. Up until the stoppage, Romero didn't really land flush. He landed flush in the last round. When he landed flush, Barroso went down. It told me right then and there, I don't know if he can take it. End quote. What's your reaction to that quote?
Ridiculous, to be honest with you.
What?
You know, I mean, he shouldn't be looking at stuff like that. And if he's thinking to himself beforehand, you know, look at his age, stuff like that. But Barroso was winning the fight.
Yeah. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt in a way of that explanation. It's reasonable. It is reasonable. But you're also kind of right. Like, it wasn't, you know, Barroso was likely winning the fight and he didn't really take that much punishment, you know? That's a crazy, I don't know. Like, I think we touched on after that fight. Would you rather let, as a referee, as an official, let it go on too far and then something happens and you get criticized for the punishment that the fighter takes and it could be really bad, or stop it early and take the criticism of an early stoppage and say people and tell people that, and take the criticism that you're corrupt or something like that? Which one do you take?
I don't know. I see where you're coming from, but like during that fight, none of those punches landed. He obviously had a bad view and stuff like that. And this is a prime example of why I think the referees shouldn't have to speak to the media. I was, you know, a high level soccer referee in the UK and they don't do it over there. And it's that for that reason, like he puts that statement out, he's made himself look foolish, or you speak to the media and you speak to someone who's well-trained and they lead you down a path and then suddenly come at you with some, you know, well-prepared question. And then you're on video or whatever, you know, stumbling over the answer to the question because you're not media trained like some of these guys are. So, you know, maybe they have like a figurehead, you know, like an Andy Foster for, you know, California, who can come out there and, you know, say why things were done or whatever. But, you know, would you want me to come and sit and ask you questions about your job, you know, when you're at work, Danny, or, you know, people are listening? Do you want... I'm not one for it. I don't think there's anything good. You know, you could get someone like a Jack Reese, who's one of the better referees. He gets caught up on a question and then what, you know, it's not a good look for him. And then he gets, you know, banished from California, you know, because he said something that he didn't think about at the time, or he stumbles on a question. So, yeah, I don't think anything good is going to come from that. You know, I still think they should be held accountable for, you know, bad performances, you know, the referees, but I don't think they should have to be open to, you know, questioning from the media.
Yeah. But everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, you know, all these Twitter personalities and the boxing world and stuff like that, these officials have to answer the judges and stuff like that, or the judges should have to answer the media and stuff like that. It's just like, in a way, I mean, I see it. I can see why.
Nothing good's going to come from it.
But like, it's, it's also like that might also, like you said, it might muddy the waters a little bit. Because then if they have to answer to the media after, like, are during their judging or their performance or whatever, they, so like a referee, are they going to have that in the back of their mind and then do something because they don't want to take certain questions that they might get? Like, you know,
we're hard stuck for young referees coming through or people that want to be referees because it doesn't pay a huge amount of money. And then to also
put a government job. It's a government employee.
And then to put in there, like, hey, also, when you become a referee, when you have a bad performance, we're then going to throw you in front of the media. Who then's going to want to do it? Even less people.
Right, yeah. And honestly, there's not a lot of... I think all the major sports, at least in the United States, don't put their referees or their umpires or whatever, they don't put them out there like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Like, unless you start seeing these major sports do it, you're not going to see it, you know... Like if the NFL starts it, the other ones might start looking and be like, oh, they feel public pressure to start doing it. And everybody kind of falls in line, but no, like none of them do it. So, and Jack, I honestly, it's Jack probably better that way. It's probably better that way just to keep it like that, you know, cause you're right. It's a double-edged sword, but
yeah,
just keep them out of the media, man. Just keep them out. Like, you know, we will see. Like we touched on earlier a few minutes ago, Canelo, according to ESPN, met with Al Heyman in Cleveland, Ohio last week to discuss a potential Charlo bout. I mean, I'm okay with that. You know, why not?
100%. I think everyone's okay with that, right? It's it'd be a great fight. You know, one of the fights that we've been calling for some time, and hopefully. You know, we're getting towards that date. You know, is it going to be, like you touched on, is it going to be the usual Mexican Independence Day, September the 16th? Or is Canelo going to put it back this year and he's just going to wait for that big bag of money from Saudi Arabia? But, you know, we're halfway through June. Hopefully we're going to get some type of light at the end of the tunnel soon and we know where we stand on in terms of that. Because, like you said, now we posted on our Twitter handle, are we going to end up losing the Mexican Independence Day to MMA? And I know some people think that's wild, but how popular is MMA?
No, maybe, but they don't really have, MMA doesn't really have a big Mexican star. They don't.
They're gathering steam, you know, we've got like,
no, they are, but like, there's nobody like Canelo.
No.
There was nobody like a De La Hoya, you know, like there's not like, you know, you can put big fighters on that weekend and people will tune in, like Conor McGregor and stuff. But, like, it's traditionally you put on a big Mexican star. And the biggest Mexican star in combat sports for the last several years has been Canelo Alvarez. So, you know, if MMA takes that weekend, it's going to be hard for them to really capitalize on that market. And there's obviously I think if you look at it, boxing has a bigger Latin fan base than MMA does. So, you know, it really depends. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Canelo met with Heyman in Cleveland, him and Eddie Reynoso reportedly. So we'll see how that ended up. That's interesting. And I think Canelo and Eddie Reynoso have said in past interviews that they like Heyman. Like they, you know, they think he's a respectful guy and, you know, he's, when they talk to him, you know, they have good conversations. So, I mean, the good thing about Heyman, everybody kind of talks about him and, you know, say everything, but he stays out of the public eye. So you can criticize him all you want, but like he stays in the shadows, man. He stays in the shadows, doesn't give any interviews. You don't see him. So, you know, he kind of works, does all his magic from the shadows, whether it's good or bad, however you want to look at it. But it also helps his reputation. Like people are like, hey, you know, I'm going to keep it private. You know, I won't say anything.
If the UFC going forward is obviously going to, you know, book up the T-Mobile for the, you know, the Mexican Independence Day in Las Vegas, where do you think Canelo and then the next biggest Mexican star, California, where do you think they're going to be based for the big
California fight? Or Texas?
Yeah.
California or Texas. So, and it could be Texas because they're 2 hours ahead by a little earlier. I don't know. It depends, but Who knows? But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round, episode 235. As we mentioned, we were at the Munguia fight in Southern California here at the Toyota Arena. That was a great action-packed fight. And then there was another great fight on the East Coast between Lopez and Josh Taylor at the theater at Madison Square Garden. So this was one of the best weekends we've had the whole year. So so far, halfway through the year here in June 2023, we've had a pretty good half year so far in the sport of boxing. But before we sign off again here on The Last Round, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the fights and then looking forward to Edgar Berlanga's first fight for Matchroom against Jason Quigley and the return of Adam Kausnacki.
Oh, he's back. The guy from Poland. Is he from New York too? Yeah, that's true. That is true. So for once again, from my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.